So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. My name is Jacob Berkowitz. I work for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Engineer Research and Development Center in Vicksburg, Mississippi. And the research I'll be presenting on today was conducted in collaboration with the Wetland Aquatic Biogeochemistry Laboratory, or WABL, at the Louisiana State University, in conjunction with John White, who's in the room here, and Lindsay Green, who is a graduate student who we were able to fund some of her master's degree research. And Lindsay has now gone on and now holds a position with the Audubon Society in New Orleans. So I'll be talking today about a comparison of soil physical, chemical, and microbial activity in wetlands created using traditional and what we'll term engineering with nature approaches. And this talk kind of provides a very applied look at some of the ways that we can use proxy measures of microbial activity to inform us about soil properties and what's going on in the larger ecosystem. I think this talk will lay a good groundwork for the talks to follow, which are going to be presented by microbiologists and gene sequencing experts. And so they'll get more into the nitty-gritty of the microbial portion, whereas our approach is to use the microbial measures as more a proxy measure for what's going on at an ecosystem level. So my objectives this morning are to introduce the concept of engineering with nature, which we as scientists, soil scientists, ecologists, and others in the Corps of Engineers are finally beginning to convince the engineers that work with us that we can use nature's approaches beneficially in our civil works and military projects. We'll talk a little bit about wetland creation strategies, discuss soil chemical and biogeochemical parameters that we looked at in these created wetland environments, and then touch on potential water quality improvements and water quality functions that these wetlands can provide to us as a society. So as I mentioned, we've been working hard with the engineering community to try and get them to adopt more nature-based approaches to our engineering design. And as a result of that, the Army Corps of Engineers has initiated a new research program entitled Engineering with Nature. And the Engineering with Nature program is designed to harness science and engineering to produce the optimal operational efficiencies supporting our U.S. Army Corps of Engineers projects. The main idea here is how can we use natural processes to achieve maximum environmental benefits while we do our projects. So examples would include enhanced beneficial use of dredge materials, things like living shorelines, and natural and nature-based features. So how can we get the engineering community out of the mindset where they just want to throw down riprap everywhere to prevent erosion, for example, and use things like green infrastructure to try and achieve those same goals while supporting environmental initiatives. So the demonstration project I'll be talking about occurs in southern Louisiana. And so this is the lower Atchafalaya River. The box indicates the actual study area. This is down where the Atchafalaya River flows out into the Gulf of Mexico. And the Atchafalaya River takes about a third of the flow from the greater Mississippi River system. The Corps of Engineers dredges that part of lower Louisiana. We have a mandate from Congress to maintain certain channel depths and witnesses to support navigation. And so they've done a lot of dredging in this portion of the river. And you can see in the diagram here, this is the lower Atchafalaya River. Each one of these shaded areas is a dredge placement site where we have created wetlands throughout the 1990s and 2000s. So we have material that has to come out of the river, and that's material that we can then use to build wetlands along the banks of the river. So they've done quite a bit of dredging there. Their annual expenditures, just to give you an idea of the monetary effect of this, are $30 million a year. They spend dredging the lower Mississippi and Atchafalaya rivers. So we're talking about some pretty high-dollar projects. The problem that they've run into in the lower Atchafalaya River is they've essentially filled in many portions of the shoreline where they could get material into. So they're running out of places to put all this material. And so as a result, they started to look at some alternative placement techniques. Traditionally, they will dike off an area or put floating geotextiles out in an area, pump dredge material into that diked off area, and allow it to settle. And so we end up with these sorts of quasi-natural features that they've built over time. And so what I'll be talking on today is comparing one of these traditional dredge material placement areas, which is built using what I term the pump and dump technique, to an engineering with nature approach, where they actually let the river system rework the sediments, creating a much more natural or nature-based system. Now, I'd like to caveat all the results that I'll be presenting today by getting it out forward that we have limited opportunities for replication in these types of studies, because these are novel construction approaches, and so literally we have one island that was built using this technique. And so when we went to publish our paper, that was one of the responses we got from reviewers, is they said, well, where's your replication? And I said, well, I've only got one island to work with, so it's difficult to replicate these studies, just so everybody knows that we do have potential lack of replication here. So looking at the traditional dredge material placement activities, in 1998, they started building this island, and you can see that what they do is they pump material into the middle, and you get these kind of donut hole features, where they just pump material out there, let us settle, and that's it. There's no sort of sorting of the material. They're placed in these low-velocity shoreline areas, and so they literally just pump it and dump it until they get the material above water. Now, over time, these areas do develop vegetation on them. The soils start to develop further, and they do start to trap material as it comes down the river. And so we typically see this kind of landward migration where the river is trapping material in this low-velocity area, and it starts to build out, oftentimes connecting with the original land surface. And you can see that the pump sites, these whole donut holes, persist through time, as indicated by the white arrows. So we encourage them to do some novel approaches to doing dredge material because they ran out of places to put the stuff. And so they were either going to have to convert wetlands to uplands, which is not desirable. We'd rather have waterfowl habitat than rattlesnake habitat in southern Louisiana. So we'd like them to maintain them as wetlands. The third option they had was to pump all this stuff out to the Gulf of Mexico and dump it out in the middle of the Gulf, which is very expensive and represents a loss of sediment from the system. And so we encourage them to maintain as much sediment in the system as possible. So beginning in the late 1990s, they undertook what was at the time a very risky strategy of taking the material from the dredge sites and piling it in a mid-river location upstream of an unsubmerged natural shoal. And so you can see in the figure here that we have these areas where they're piling dredge material above this shoal, and then over time, you see no island, no island, and then we're getting a little blip here, and then as they put more dredge material out, we're actually building this mid-river wetland island, and it's growing over time. And I have some better images here. Looking at 2008 through 2014, you can see how the island is expanding and growing as this material is sorted out by the river system. All right, and you can actually see one of the dredge material mounds here just upstream of the island. So they've built this island out there, 17 dredging events, ranging in a half to 2.7 million cubic yards of shoal material, and it's resulted in the creation of this 100-acre wetland island. And so we were asked to go out and do an assessment and look at the soils and see what this island was doing, not just in terms of soils, but other factors as well, but we'll be focusing on the soil aspects today. So we went out and looked at the island and compared it to a traditional pump and dump island. And what we found is we found the multiple wetland classes that we'd expect to find in one of these systems. So a mixture of forested areas, shrub-scrub vegetation, emergent areas, and then submerged aquatic bed habitats. And these are the hectares and then the percentages of the different habitats. So we found pretty similar distribution of habitat types, and we sampled the soils in each one of those habitat types accordingly. The key to habitat type in southern Louisiana in these systems is elevation. And so when we do construction, we can target specific elevations to drive the outcomes. So if you want a forested system that's going to support migratory waterfowl nesting, then we know what elevations we need to hit for that. If you want to have a submerged aquatic habitat that perhaps is going to support more denitrification activities, then we know the target elevations to hit for those. And so we saw significant differences in elevation based on the habitat types. But this is a soils talk, a soils conference. So let's talk a little bit about the soils there. So what we saw at the Engineering with Nature Island, the one in Mid River, that was formed using this kind of sorting of material approach, we had fine sandy textures, thin organic layers, less than 2 centimeters, and we saw the occurrence of frequent buried soil horizons. So we know that that area, it's in the Mid River, it's gotten formed by this dredge material being sorted by the river activity, and we're getting frequent overflow events that are adding more material to that island. The traditional dredge material placement area, the pump and dump area, had sandy loam textures, so finer soil textures. It had thicker organic rich mineral soil layers, and we did not observe a lot of buried soil horizons there. Now, not surprisingly, both soils had numerous indicators that these are hydric soils. We had depleted matrices, many redoxomorphic features found throughout the soil profile. So throughout, these are wetlands, they're getting wet. In terms of wetland creation, they both meet the bill. But how do they compare in terms of their soil physical properties? We had higher sand content at the Engineering with Nature Island. And so you can imagine you put this dredge material out in the middle of the river flows and picks up that material, and as you would expect, the fines move downstream, and the coarser, heavier sand particles fall out. And so this natural sorting event is causing a difference in the soil textures. So more silt at the traditional dredge material placement area. And we can attribute those results to the differences in construction technique and this effect of winnowing that's happening in the mid-river location. The bulk density at the Engineering with Nature Island was significantly higher, and that is likely due to the difference in age of the islands, and we saw some indications that the traditional island showed more soil development because of the difference in ages. Looking a little bit into the soil nutrients, we saw that the soil nutrients are increasing over time in the Engineering with Nature Island. So it is recruiting soil carbon and nitrogen as one would expect. That recruitment is in line with what's been reported by some other studies, including work done by Chris Kraft, who looked at wetland restoration in Georgia and North Carolina and showed similar rates of soil nutrient increases over time. The soil nutrients at the Engineering with Nature Island were lower than the traditional dredge material placement area. And so you can see some of the numbers there. They're pretty similar across the board, where we see higher nutrients at the traditional dredge material placement area, with a few exceptions across all the habitat types examined. So these observed differences in physical properties and the soil nutrients can be attributed to a combination of both the wetland age and the construction technique. And so despite our efforts, we were not able to decouple those two things very well in terms of soil nutrients. In terms of the physical properties, I think we can have a pretty good explanation of the differences based on the construction techniques alone and this effect of winnowing in the system. And here's old Daryl out here in the submerged aquatic habitat area. And just for perspective, old Daryl's about 6'5", so it's a pretty big dude in there. All right, this is a great shot of Lindsay, the graduate student who's involved, taking her first soil core. Pretty successful for a first coring effort, I will say, down in the wetland there. And so what we wanted to do is look at indicators of microbial activity and how those can relate to soil function. And so we looked at two different parameters. We looked at the soil microbial biomass nitrogen, which represents a proxy measure of the microbial pool size. And generally, people talk about the microbial pool being about 1 to 3% of the total nutrient content in these wetland soils. And the reason that's important is because that's the really active portion of the microbial, of the nutrient pool. And so those are the real movers and the shakers that are moving things around. And so when we have higher microbial biomass nitrogen, then it's a more microbially active system. We also looked at nitrate-nitrogen flux rates, which we use as a proxy measure for nutrient availability and reducing conditions to process nitrate. So more nitrate-nitrogen flux rates equals more ability to process nitrate in the system, which leads into things like denitrification activity and water quality improvements. So despite the differences observed in the soil nutrients and the physical parameters, we did not see any differences in these proxy microbial measurements. And what this suggests to us is that we have an equivalent level of water quality improvement potential in terms of nitrogen removal from the system. And we'll get a little bit deeper on that in the next slide. One important point, and this is again one of the messages that we're sending out to our engineering colleagues, is that we saw maximum nitrate-nitrogen flux rates in the submerged aquatic bed habitats. So these areas where Lindsay is standing that are submerged all year round, not surprisingly, have the highest capacity to remove nitrate from the system. So elevation is the key when we're constructing these things. If we want to see microbial activity maximized and nitrate removal potentials maximized, we need to build systems to this elevation where we get these sort of submerged aquatic habitats. All right, to put things in context, we utilize river stage data from the area to estimate the potential nitrate-nitrogen removal on an annual basis in these two created wetland environments. And so as many know, most know, we have a nitrogen problem in the lower Mississippi River Valley where we get excess runoff from agricultural areas throughout the Midwest and the South that come down the river and cause this annual zone of hypoxia or anoxia, what the media likes to term the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So you can see an image of it here. This is the extent of it in 2013, the year that we used for our calculations. And so we took the river stage for that entire year, and we looked at how frequently the islands are submerged and the area of the islands, as well as their nitrate-nitrogen removal capacity, and we calculated that they both have the capacity to remove about 1,600 kilograms of nitrate-nitrogen per year. Okay, so that seemed like a pretty big number to me when we first did the calculations. However, if you compare that to the total amount of nitrate-nitrogen coming down the river, it turns out not to be very much. So Goolsby and others estimated that 20 million tons of nitrate-nitrogen are coming down the river every year. And so if you look deeper into our calculations, you find out that our small wetland island that's been created could remove less than 0.001% of that nitrogen. And so that represents a very small fraction of the 20 to 50,000 square kilometers of wetlands that would be required to eliminate hypoxia in the Gulf. Now, I don't want folks to think that I'm suggesting that we should not be building wetlands or trying to remove nitrate nitrogen from surface waters, but I do think it's important to keep in context the size of these projects in relation to the size of the problem. So, in summary, we found different wetland creation strategies exhibited different soil properties in terms of both nutrients and physical properties. However, we saw similar capacity for water quality improvement in terms of nitrate-nitrogen removal, and that points us in the direction of what's going on within the microbial community. The aquatic bed habitats maximize nitrate-nitrogen removal, and so if that's something that people want to pursue in terms of their restoration projects, then that's the habitat that we recommend that they build. And so we know what target elevations to build those at, and that's where we need to focus if that's the goal of our restoration or creation project. And I'd also like to close with just saying that there is a growing interest within the Corps of Engineers and the other agencies in terms of harnessing these natural activities, engineering with nature concepts, natural and nature-based features, green infrastructure. And so we're really pushing our engineering colleagues to incorporate that into their designs moving forward. Just as an aside, you might think it counterintuitive for someone who's dredging out the river to place the material back into the river. And so we did some hydrologic and settlement modeling, and we actually showed that the creation of the island has decreased the cross-sectional area of that stretch of the river. And so it's actually increased the flow velocities through that portion of the shipping channel. And 2015 and 16 were the first years that they did not have to conduct annual maintenance dredging along that stretch of the river. So in some ways, we would suggest that these sort of engineering approaches can not only benefit in terms of habitat and water quality improvement, but also can show a benefit in terms of the requirement for maintenance dredging and other construction activities. If you're interested in this research, this paper was recently published in Ecological Engineering, so I encourage you to look at that or contact me if you'd like a copy of that information. I think it's published online now. I'm not sure if that actual, if it's come out in the hard copy, but feel free to contact me. And I'd like to thank John Newton for sinking an airboat while we were out there, Jeff Corbino from the New Orleans District Corps of Engineers. And funding for this project was provided by the Engineering with Nature program and the Dredging Operations Technical Support program. And with that, we have about 3 minutes for questions. Mike.
Yeah. Looking at your bulk density values, they were all less than 1, right? 0.6, 0.3. For mineral soil, that's exceptionally low. That's in the organic soil, neck of the woods. If those were mineral soil with low density, did you notice that trees were falling over? I mean, you'd almost expect so little bearing capacity in soil that
correct.
They'd fall over.
So these systems are pretty young. Like the oldest portion of it's about 18 years old. The trees that are in the forested sections are pretty small. But having been out there, and I think John can speak to this, especially in the traditional dredge material area where they just pump it and dump it, you get out into areas where you almost feel like you're on a quaking bog. It's mineral soil, but it's not very well consolidated in a lot of places. And I think that's a result of the construction techniques.
I was going to say, though, in a case like that, a little bit higher densities might be better for it. So
yeah.
Unusual to say that, but I think in this case it might be fine.
Yeah. Agreed. Time for one or two more questions or comments? Okay. Well, thank you all.